Welcome to this edition of Roaming with Restless Women. Today I have a phenomenal guest with me, Emma Powell. Emma is a stay was a stay-at-home, or maybe still is a stay-at-home mom of six. She retired her husband before age 48 and is now traveling full-time on passive real estate income. As a co-founder and a president of Rise Capital Investments, a boutique private debt and equity fund, Emma has raised several million dollars of capital for joint ventures and syndications. Their motto is, "We help you figure out how to take more adventures," which, of course, I love. Emma went from stay-at-home mom of six to a multimillionaire in less than 5 years. She has partnered on almost 1,000 apartment units and sponsors a free commercial investing club to help other investors expand their portfolios. Today, Emma and I are going to talk about seven streams of income for a fully diversified portfolio to weather economic ups and downs, especially now given the situation in the stock market over the last few days. I think it's kind of relevant and timely. So, welcome, Emma. It's good to have you. To meet a fellow traveler like myself.
Yeah, so glad to be here. I love the title of your podcast, Restless Women. I saw that and I'm like, this is my show.
So, we will be interrupted by my dog occasionally, so excuse me for
I remember those days of
that.
being interrupted by my kids. My youngest is 12 now, so we got her trained. We got a red light on the door. So, but yeah, those homeschooling that many kids, there were a lot of like little tips, tricks, and hacks we had so that mom could work remotely.
Goodness gracious. Well, you don't look old enough to have six kids, that's for sure. And it must have been difficult to homeschool that many kids at one time, given the age range.
Well, I think that homeschooling is actually what really led me into investing, which in a roundabout indirect way, because when I think I had like three kids in school and I had two littles at home, and having them in school was turning into a full-time job because each student's kind of a part-time job. And then I had the littles at home and I was trying to go back to work. I was a photographer, a real estate photographer actually. And I was just having a hard time keeping everything together. And I'm kind of a hands-off parent. I'm not a very controlling kind of person. I mean, I love to argue and be right? Like I like to be with the smart crowd, and I'm gonna put that out there. I'm not afraid of putting my opinions out there and defending them, like in a debate, respectful debate kind of thing. But overall, I'm not a very confrontational, controlling person. And so I didn't want to control the kids' lives, tell them what to do. I didn't want to be in the notebooks and did you pack your lunch and the routines. We just wanted a slower, more laid back pace of life. And so what ended up happening was I pulled my oldest out because I always had thought I'd middle school homeschool because there's just not a lot of learning going on, a lot of social torture. And I just figured like, they kind of skip over that part and just go back to high school. So we pulled her out in middle school. She tested in all the GT classes and they told her that she couldn't take all of them because she wasn't going to have enough time to do all the homework. And I said, well, she's intellectually capable of doing it, but just time management is going to be a problem. Then we can probably accomplish more at home. So with her, I homeschooled her in that first year very traditionally. But then my first grader was getting sick all the time and she was missing a lot of school. And just little, she'd pop a little fever. Maybe it was allergies. Who knows, right? So she was missing 2, 3 days a week, and we were starting to get in trouble with the district. And I was doing all her little workbook thingies at home, and she was not falling behind academically, but we were kind of getting the attendance run around. And I said, you know what? And then my second grader, his teacher basically reported us to the CPS for an incident with the baby that he said something at school, and next thing I knew, the kids were all pulled in and being questioned about. It was really
Oh,
disturbing. It was really
no.
disturbing because I feel like my daughter came home from school and was talking about this man who was asking her about her private parts, and I was like, wait, what? Because they're not allowed to tell you. It's a misdemeanor if the school calls you and tells you that this investigation is going on. And
Oh
so
my
I had no
goodness.
idea until my kids came home, and I just could not figure out what was happening. And I thought there was some weird guy outside the school until I was getting more of the story, called my son in, what's going on, what's going on. And then I realized like, this is a child services investigation. And I was livid, livid. And so I actually sent him back to school. They were in school for the rest of that whole year. And then their next year started, and a couple of weeks in, I just felt like the teacher said some things about how my son was getting bullied, but that's good for him because he's learning social skills. I was like, you know what? I was already homeschooling the oldest. It was way better, way less time consuming. And I said, you know what? I'm just done. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm feeling very judged as a parent for being outside the box, for being an alternative thinker. And it was really tying us down on vacations and things like that. So I pulled them all home. And then with that time and location freedom we got from homeschooling, I got very restless. We were going out and going on tons of fun adventures and doing all sorts of things with our homeschool co-op, with day trips and all the field trips. It was just so much fun. Here's my husband was kind of tying us down from that location and time freedom. He had a job, he had a commute. And even after 2020, when he was remote, he had to be kind of tied to a desk with a high-speed internet connection. And I was just very frustrated, like, I need to free him from this commute job so that we can go out and do some more fun things. And so I was like, I'm not going to make that's not photography. That's not what I'm doing. And so
Right.
we started on the real estate thing with our own home, remodeling our own home, refinancing that, and taking that money and then going out and starting a real estate business. So when he got laid off, we made a move from Austin, Texas up to Salt Lake City, Utah, kind of very unexpectedly. We in like less than 3 weeks, our forever home went to like on the market, right? And we left, but we
Wow.
left with a pile of cash in our hands from selling that house and a new kind of vision. Like, I'm going to do this. Because when we move across the country, my business is now gone. Did I want to restart that photography business? Absolutely not. It was not my highest and best use of my time versus income. And I knew from photography before with like weddings and things like that, that I was doing like cheap photography because everybody deserves beautiful pictures on their wedding day. But I was working for very little money, editing and doing all these weddings. And that was taking time away from my kids. Every time I was like, hey, mommy's got to finish a shoot, right? I realized like this person doesn't deserve cheap photos at the expense of that person. And so I started raising my prices and really started thinking a lot more about highest and best use. And when I really sat down, like, do I want to go back to school and become an engineer or a physician or something? Because I was 40 and I thought, I still have time, right? You're going to be 50 eventually. You might as well be a doctor and engineer at 50, right? But then I was like, you know what? I can make that kind of money right now in real estate and not have to go back to school for it. No opportunity cost, no stress, none of that. And so I just said, you know what? I've got no business. The kids are all pretty self-sufficient. We had the homeschooling thing really down. And I said, let's just do it. So I started a real estate business in 2018. We bought like three rental houses that first year. And then I realized that I didn't like that. And I needed to figure out how to do it a little bit more hands-off, a little more passively.
Whoa. That was very, very fast. Oh my goodness.
That was a lot.
So when you say you wanted to do it more passively, sorry about my phone. I forgot to turn that off. Oh, I'll have to edit this part out. Wait till it finishes. One more. Okay. So when you said, okay, I have these three houses, I don't really want to do as much of this as hands-on. What changes did you make? And then talk to me about your seven streams of income.
So my husband really said something that hit me because I was growing my real estate business and I was buying apartment buildings with syndications, basically putting groups of investors together where I was the business owner leading the project, but then my investors were coming in very passively. So basically buying a security, which is the same thing you do in the stock market. You go in, you buy shares in a company, and then you own a little piece of that company and you get to share in when they go up in value or if they're paying dividends that you get a piece of that. And so it's the same thing. You can buy private stocks into any kind of private company. We've heard this with tech startups, venture capital. It's the same thing in real estate. We put out some shares, we run it through all the SEC rules with the securities investors, and they come in and they basically buy shares of the property. And so I was doing that, but I mean, that takes a lot of management as well. That was less passive, right? I was trying to make it more passive, like, oh, if we get bigger buildings, apartments, we'll have more in one business and it's not going to be so scattered around. But it actually ended up taking a lot of time. I had way more units, right? But I didn't feel like I was making way more money because I was sharing it all with the investors. And I thought to myself, like, I don't have to do this. There are people younger than me who are better at this than I am, who love this and are making a career out of it. And I was at this crossroads where I said, okay, we're either building passive income so we can retire my husband early, Or we're building a massive business and he can retire into the business and basically come work and be a business partner. And he said,
Okay.
I don't want to retire and quit my job just so that you can have a full-time job and then we'll just have the same problem. And I thought, okay, this is true. So I ratcheted everything down at that point. I thought, I raise capital from private investors. I can be a private investor if I can get enough of this cash from these properties freed up so that I can actually invest it. And we all know we all have equity in our homes, right? What do you do with that equity? This goes on your net worth, right? But does it make you actually richer? Does it make you take nicer vacations? Can you go put your equity debit card at the grocery store? No, like that equity is useless until you can get at it. And so we had to start selling, refinancing, these kinds of things, just repositioning. I also gave away managing partner on a couple of projects where once we got it stabilized and the new refinanced loan in place, I was able to step away and turn that over to a partner who's going to handle like taxes, ongoing maintenance, property manager stuff. And one of my partners said to me, I asked a question about one of the reports she sent me, and she said, I was kind of under the impression that you just wanted your quarterly distribution, and that was it. I'm like, well, I mean, kind of, but I still have a question every once in a while, right? So just figuring out how to step back from management, how to become more of a limited partner myself, because my limited partners who invested in my deals were all richer than me and smarter than me and more experienced than me. And hanging out with richer, smarter, more experienced people than you, they tell you things and you learn about their lifestyles and how they're doing it. So that's one thing. I had to put myself more into that limited partner and let go of control, which again, this is kind of where having a lot of kids and homeschooling helped me, because I've burned that out, that need to control every little thing. And real estate investors especially tell me this all the time. They'll be like, I have 20 rental houses. I'm running basically a full-time business as a property manager. I have $11 million in equity or something. And I said, can you part with, say, half of that and put that in passive, like sell a few homes and put that in passive? Like, I can't give up control. I need control. Well, if you need control, that's fine. That's a psychology thing. That's fine. But that comes with a trade-off. The upside of control is that you may be able to lavish love on a deal more than you otherwise would if you weren't in control, or somebody who owns it, but that they don't really own it. They're just running it, right? So that control comes with an upside, right? But it also comes with two downsides. One, you're probably not the most qualified person to run this business. There are plenty of people out there who probably do it better than you are. Go find one of them and give them your money. So the other downside is that you're then tied down. So you're tied to a location. And if you have houses in multiple markets, like let's say you live in California and everything you do is in Texas and Indiana, you're going to be traveling there pretty often. Like, oh, just get a property manager. That is not how it works. Vacancy will kill you. And that's the thing that property managers on single family homes are the worst at, is getting tenants in there without long latency periods. And you can kill the profits of a rental property with 2, 3 months of vacancy. So that, to me, just turn that part over to a property manager. Again, you need control. There's no amount of owning your own business that you're so hands off that it's not an anchor to you at some point or another. And even if you get it to the point where it's fairly hands off, you can't just go move to Spain and hike the Camino Real with no internet connection, right? You can't. So, and there's always that, like, it's like a teenager who calls you in the middle of the night and says, hey, I just got into a DUI accident, right? You weren't expecting that call that night, right? But sometimes teenagers do that kind of stuff. And then that's how houses are. You'll get a call in the middle of the night or in the middle of the day. Hey, something is spraying. Drywall is coming down. There's some kind of flood. We had a Hurricane Helene damage on one of our Kentucky rentals I mean, Kentucky hurricane damage? Where did that come from? So those kinds of things happen, and we just had to extricate ourselves from controlling everything, the daily management of the business, and learn from our investors how to do this more passively. And so the business that we run now, I'm kind of just raising capital for it, and I found a guy who knows way more about it than I do, who can run the actual business side. So we lend money basically to flippers. And that is so much less work, so much less headache, so much less risky. And if you're compounding the money by reinvesting your interest, you're basically making the same as you would make on an apartment building or something like that anyway. And so to me, I'm like, so we really shifted a lot of our focus over to that as our major stream of income. It's not our major stream of income yet because we're still rolling everything in and compounding. But major streams are things like a couple of rental houses that we still own. We sold some of our houses on seller financing. Basically, like we're now the bank, we hold the note, but we no longer enjoy the appreciation on that house, but we also don't have to take care of it or do anything with it. If they default on the note, it's an estate where we can easily foreclose on the house, take it back, sell it again. We're not in the business of loan to own. We want them to be successful and we give them long term notes, or we make sure they can successfully refinance. There are all sorts of that. I mean, that's a book in itself right there, how to
Oh,
do
I'm
that.
sure.
But that's a source of income for us, those kind of cash deals. We get some distributions from some of the deals that we're in passively. And then we kind of occasionally will get a little bit from our lending fund as distributions back to the owners. We keep the origination points when we originate a loan. That's our profit margin that we split among us. So we have those couple of streams of income, and then we have a few that are more long term that are brewing. Like, if, again, the fund will continue to grow and build us more active income. We'll continue to invest in our own loans and make more interest income. We have a few houses that should be selling here or refinancing and getting the rest of our equity back out. Because when you sell it, their down payment may not cover your entire equity. If you have 100,000 in equity and they put 50,000 down, you got still 50,000 in equity trapped there. So we stack those up so they would kind of sell in a cycle, like a snowball, Dave Ramsey reverse snowball type of thing. So we should have some larger cash chunks coming out from some of those, and then some of the apartment buildings that we've kind of stepped back on, either become limited partners or non-managing partners that will sell over the next few years, and that will come in and we'll be able to reposition that. And we do still have money in the public stock markets as well. So the thought that like you're going to find the golden goose that's just going to suddenly provide you enough to, it's a multi-pronged strategy that we basically got from the IRS report that they did. I don't remember what year it was. It was quite a while ago, where they were taking the estate tax form that people fill out after they die. So the year that they die, they fill out this particular form, and they did a study to say like the wealthiest people are making money from these sources, and it was the seven sources that kept coming back again. They had rental income, dividend income, that some of them still had business or job income, and they just laid it all out. And so as I'm looking at this report, like wealthy people have at least seven streams of income on average, not at least on average. And I thought I need seven streams of income or five or more than one. My husband had one W-2 job and I had a little hobby photography business on the side. That was not serving us. And so we really had to think like, how can we split our focus for seven streams of income without being completely inept at all of them? Because you want to be an expert at something, right? Well, you be an expert at something and the other six are passive streams of income. And so we really focused on building those.
That's amazing. Oh my goodness. And so that was that report was what kind of gave you the impetus to figure out what was going to be your seven streams.
Yes. And people
Oh,
talk about it a
wow.
lot. They're like the average millionaire has seven streams of income. And I was hearing this in our real estate investing clubs. Those are great. I mean, that's like $100 a year, $150 a year. You have a monthly meeting. So we joined all of those, hanging out with other people doing what we wanted to be doing. Like that's how I learned how to homeschool, was joining groups and co-ops and hanging out at park days and play days and picking the brains of all the women who were older than me, had been doing it longer than me. So I did the same thing in real estate, just started hanging out with them all. And at one point somebody said, the average millionaire has seven streams of income. And I'm like, really? Do they really? So I looked it up and sure enough, it was from this IRS report.
Wow. So what is the thing that you love the most about the real estate business in particular?
I love the flexibility of it. I love how it's allowed us to travel full time. My husband was 48 and I was 46 when he got laid off for the last time. It was funny because it was like 3 days after we went on a retreat with our now business partners to plan out, do we want to start a business? How kind of hands off can this be? Because I mean, I was not looking at a big thing. I just wanted a lifestyle business. He was doing hard money lending to flip to local flippers in Salt Lake, and I was like, "Hey, can we put some money with you because we need cash flow? We got a lot of equity, we got no cash flow." Like, and he wants to quit his job, and so we sat down at a retreat, planned out our business. They came up with a quitting date for him, which I think that was like November 22, And he decided he was going to give his notice the la in the middle of January, and his last day would be the end of January, something like that. And 3 days later, we got back from the retreat, and he calls me and he says, "Hey, so HR just showed up on my meeting." I'm like, "Oh man, that would have been the reaction when he got laid off in 2017 in Texas. That was the reaction. It was like, oh, what are we gonna do, right? Freaking out." But the reaction in 2022 was like, "Yes, now you get severance. Now you qualify for unemployment. And we had saved up a year's worth of income because I had done a very large project in downtown Salt Lake City, a construction project, a high-rise building. And once we got the ground ready, shovel ready, we sold it to our general contractor. And my portion of that was enough to put aside a year's worth of income and then put the rest into some passive investments." And so that's what we did. I said, "We got our year's worth of income. You got severance." And his severance went till the end of January, which was when he was going to quit anyway. But now he had two-ish plus months to help my partner build our business and come into it immediately
Perfect.
rather than waiting till January. And then for the next, I don't remember how long unemployment made him apply for jobs, like 6 months, 9 months, something like that. He did not get one interview, not one. It was horrible. I said, "It's a good thing
Yeah.
that we didn't need a job because this has been terrible." And so that was Thanksgiving of 2022. And in December, I said, "You know, all these long trips we're always talking about going on, before we really get this business up and off the ground, let's go do one. Let's just go do it." So we left and rented out our house and put backpacks on us and all of, and four of our kids. The other two were adults and stayed behind. And we hiked the Arizona Trail, 800 miles, border of Mexico, border of Utah. It took us 3 months. My daughter set a record for the youngest ever finisher of that trail. And now the amount of pride that these girls have, because all three of the daughters that finished were like three of the youngest ever to do this trail, but she was actually set the record. And she's like, "I'm a world-class athlete," right? She says, "I just walked
Oh.
every day for 3 months and set a record." And so we did that for 3 months. And then after we got done with that, we were like, "Let's keep going." So we bought an RV and just kept going. We drove from Utah to Idaho, just staying with family along the way. And we did Washington, Oregon coast. We did all of California. We flew to Hawaii for 2 weeks because our business partner lives in Maui. And it was right after the fires. And she was like, "Just come spend money. Like, that's what we need here." So
Oh,
it was the best
yeah.
like charity I've ever done. Just 2 weeks in Hawaii, just running around with the kids and spending time getting to, because that was the first time I'd met her in person. And so we did that.
Wow.
We drove all the way to Florida. We lived in Orlando for 3 months. And then we bought an RV park through our fund with our investors. And so they were like, "Well, we're in an RV." So we drove over to the park. It's in Dallas. It's on a bass fishing lake outside of Dallas. And we lived there for 6 months just trying to fix up the park, right? Like, just make it a nicer place to live and get the tenants all on, automatic payment and things like that. And so then my kids were like, "We really want to go back to a house. We really like Utah." So they In Texas, we took them back to their old house, their old water parks, everything. And they were like, "Yeah, we're good. We actually like Utah better." So we came back to
Yeah.
Utah, moved back into our house. And then a couple of months into it, and we actually went to Portugal for a couple of weeks before, we drove to Salt
Wow.
Lake, flew to Portugal, came right back. And then so we were able to take a nice little, like a graduation trip for my daughter for a couple of weeks. We went with another group who focuses on passive income. They were having a Portugal mastermind. And it was just a big group of people trying to figure out how to make passive income and retire early. And again, you got to hang out with people who are doing what you want to do. And so we went and spent 2 weeks traveling around Portugal with them. And my 18-year-old daughter had her birthday there, and it was a wonderful experience. We got back to Utah, and the kids were all like, "I think I want to see the Northern Lights next." And so we're at Easter, we're leaving to go live in Alaska for 6 months. We're working for a local tour company there. And just trying to network and meet as many people as we can who want to invest with us in our fund, from the tourists getting off the cruises, right? Most of them are have some capital. And then Juneau has the most millionaires of any small U.S. town, and we're like, "Sweet, sign me up." So we're gonna spend 6 months.
Wow.
We're
I
renting
did
a
not know
condo.
that. Oh my
I didn't know that
goodness.
either. It was just kind of coincidence, but we're using it as a networking opportunity for locals and also tourists. And I reached out to a real estate investor I know in Juneau, and I said, "Hey, we are looking for housing. It's tight there during the summer." And she said, "Oh, I'm going up to my RV park in Denali all summer. Do you want to rent my condo? Yes, we want to rent your condo. So
Oh, wow.
the power of networking, and she gave us a really good deal on it too. So we actually are doing better than if we had found something elsewhere. And she's leaving behind all her paddle boards and her bicycles and everything. And she's been like a little local tour guide for us. And so the power of networking with other people doing what you're doing, it just cannot be overstated because they have ideas, they have creative solutions. And some people might look at this as a retirement fail. Like, we're gonna go work for a tour company. We're gonna drive some buses, right? People are like, oh, I thought you're supposed to be like rich and retired early. I'm like, no, we're being humble and we're being creative and we're making our adventure happen any way that it needs to, because we
Absolutely.
are going to use the money from that to invest more. And we're going to use the opportunity to network with the people on the tour bus to be able to hopefully attract some more investors into our fund. And so I think this is a win-win all around.
That's right. Well, and that's the reason why what I do is I used to be an organization change management consultant. So, Monday through or Sunday through Thursday every week, I was somewhere else. I was at a client site. I was doing my thing. When we decided to do this, I decided, okay, I only want to do remote. I'll do contract work. And I would really, really like to have a business that doesn't require me to be in front of my computer Monday through Friday. So let me look at coaching because I coach as part of what I do with organization change management. And coaching actually allows me to pick hours. I don't have to be tied to my computer. I mean, I can answer the phone anytime. So that ultimately, that is what my whole life is going to be is coaching. Right now, I'm balancing the two because I have to have a certain amount of income, and that may not be possible with coaching, but it will be once I do retire, formally retire.
When you can get those
and
retirement accounts at 59 and a half,
a
that changes the numbers. When you can start collecting a little Social Security, when you're getting into your retirement funds at 59 and a half, those become some of your multiple streams of income.
Yes, absolutely. I had a pension from the state of Tennessee that I'm able to draw on right now. I haven't touched the rest of them because right now they're
Compounding.
not worth it.
You got to let those compounds, and
Exactly.
you have to be willing to live on a lot less than you make so that you can enjoy
Yes.
the power of compounding. And I think that's where working for the tour company comes in, because it's like we could just rent out our house here again and just use that to pay for the house up there, and we don't have to work. But I think it would be tight, and I don't think it would be as
Yeah.
much fun. Because now we'll have extra money to invest. But the other thing is if we work for one of the tour companies, we get free tours on everybody else's. So there's going to be a lot of whale watching and glacier walks and all sorts of stuff that we probably would have been like, oh, can we afford it? Like, it would be tight. So to
Right.
say that we're just not going to work because we have like this ego that says, we have multiple streams of income, we don't need another one. So I feel like being creative and having humility and making those multiple streams of income and being willing to live on less than you make. I'm not out here like, we're not flying private, we're not flying luxury. Like, I don't know if we'll ever get to the luxury point of this, but the point is spending more time with our loved ones and
Right.
figuring out how to make that happen and willing to make the sacrifices to make it happen, because we're not willing to give up the time, so we have to be passive, right? But we're kind of rethinking what it means to be really wealthy, and how long
Absolutely,
it's going to take
yes.
us to build that phase two, because we retired, right? And we're fine. But are we going to get to phase two where we're really wealthy? I think so, but it's going to take another 5, maybe 10 years of building and some active streams of income, part-time kind of stuff.
Well, and part of it too is patience.
Oh, yeah.
I
Compounding and
mean,
patience.
yeah, exactly. And really and truly, every single time I look at something and I think, okay, can I afford it? Then it's the next thing is, how important is this to me?
Yes.
So what happens is you stop buying, you stop throwing out something that, is a little older to buy something brand new that does the same thing.
Yes.
And what you wind up doing is you start looking at things like, I want to go and see live music. My heart aches for live music, so does my husband's. So, we this past weekend we splurged and went
Yep.
to two concerts. So, but it was spending time with him and listening to music, which we both love.
Yes.
That experience is way more important than anything I could have bought.
Yes. It's kind
Right?
of like
Yeah.
when you're on a health journey and you're having to give up some of your favorite foods and you just do your
Yes.
best to find substitutes. You're looking for healthy desserts or lower fat options or lower carb options. It's not exactly what you had before, but you're willing to eat that food that's not quite as yummy as the real thing because you really want the trade-off of the health benefits that you're going to get by getting your health under control. So we're on the financial diet. You've got to look at the things that you really want and you got to support those lavishly. And for us, we're buying time right now. We're buying time together. Like right now, my husband actually went to go pick up our daughter from a little class that she takes a few times a week, and they went to the gym. So he's at the gym basically homeschooling PE with our 16-year-old because he can. And I was like, hey, I got to record a podcast. He's like, don't worry, I'll go pick her up. So I worked out at home this morning instead of going to the gym, like having that flexibility and that time. We went to the gym and I said, let's go swimming. I grabbed my 12-year-old. She may be a world-class athlete, but she does not like exercising. So we swam around in the pool and she said, thanks for inviting me. That was really fun. And it was like noon, right? With dad, the homeschooled kids, even my son was there because he got laid off and he's looking for a new job. So he's like, I'll come too, right? In the middle of the day. So I just thought, you cannot buy this stuff with any amount of money. The only way you can buy this is to make sure that your mortgage is paid, your bills are paid, and everything's under control. Everybody's eating. There's gas, there's insurance, all those basic things covered. And then we were willing to say, take pause on the growth for a few more years because our youngest is 12. Like, we're in our, we're, we're right at 50, right? And it was like our oldest have already moved out. Four of our kids are already adults. It's like we're no longer willing to keep putting this off because the kids are moving out, right? And we're no longer satisfied with dad racing to Disneyland. You would, for 5 days or 10 days every other year, right? Because that's all the time we can take off work and that's all we can afford, right? So we're just over it. My mom passed away from cancer when she was 64 years old. And I was, how old was I? I think it was like 33. And I just remember sitting there thinking, like, that was it. That was all she got. They got one big RV trip around the country between her chemo treatments. And then that was it. And I thought, this is what is even retirement for? Like that put me in a tailspin. And then a few years later, my brother was in a devastating cycling accident and became a quadriplegic when he was 40. He was diagnosed with diabetes when he was 40 and completely changed his life around, became very healthy and lost all the weight and got off all of his medications. And then at 50, he has this cycling accident. And I asked him in the hospital, I said, if you'd known at 40 what that big lifestyle change would mean for you at 50, would you have made a different decision? He said, absolutely not. It was the best 10 years of my life. And here he is now in his 60s, still dealing with. I don't think we realize how bad it is before we know somebody who's close to us. It's not just you can't move your arms and legs. It's like it's so many. It's an awful, awful thing. And so I watched that him go through that in my late 30s. And so I spent my 40s figuring out how to just seize life. And then a couple of years ago, my sister's husband passed away. He was 60 years old, collapsed on the kitchen floor. And she's like, what? She still had two little kids at home as well, two teenagers. And that was just to me like confirmation that no matter what sacrifice it takes, that we're doing the right thing. And last weekend, we were at a little bit of a family reunion, and my husband saw a bunch of his friends from high school. It was a party for a family member and all of our relatives. And people just kept saying, you guys are just living the life we all want. You're doing the thing. And I felt very judged and criticized because of the way we homeschool and how laid back we are about
Oh.
how we're willing to make those financial sacrifices. Like we rent out our basement. We put an apartment down there and rent out a basement. We have a big family. We could use that space in the basement, but instead we're renting it out so that we can basically have a almost no mortgage. So those kinds of sacrifices, we drive really old, ugly cars that he just keeps fixing.
Well,
Right?
it's good
So I'm,
that
yeah, I mean his family, that's how they spend time together, is fixing their cars. They all have professional shops. So it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. But it is
Yeah.
sometimes I feel, that's why I keep talking about ego and humility, because I still feel like sometimes just judged or like I'm a failure because of some of the choices that we've made. And one of the high school friends he was talking to has cancer and she's in remission. And I keep telling her, like, we don't know how long this is going to last. It was really, you know, like stage four. Like you only, you know, statistics say you only have a certain number of years. And she told him, she's like, I wish I could go do something like what you're doing in Alaska, but I can't because my health just can't handle it. He says, you're perfectly healthy right now. Now's the time. And she said, you know what? You know what? You're right, actually. She's just like, I don't know how much longer I have. She's only 50. I don't know how much
Oh my
longer I have.
gosh.
And she was
Yeah.
like, I need to kind of rethink. I need to rethink this whole thing. I've put my life on pause, even though I'm healthy right now. And I thought that moment was, it was one of the, just those kinds of stories. It
Yeah.
reaffirms again and again and again that time with our loved ones is more important than anything else. And but I also still have plenty of time alone to relax on top of it, because you know, it can be kind of draining hanging out with people all the time. Like,
Oh yes,
yeah.
yeah, I can.
Yeah.
I have three questions that I ask at the
Yes.
end of every episode. And although I think I could spend another 5 or 6 hours
Know.
really and truly,
I
we have
love doing
a lot
podcasts.
we have a lot in common, actually. The first question is this. It requires you to close your eyes for just a moment. All right. And I'm going to say two words, and I want you to tell me what appears in your mind when I say those two words. Wise woman. You can open your eyes and tell me about her.
The story from the Bible with the 10 virgins and the lamps. So,
Yes.
just somebody who's planned ahead. And I used to wonder at that story when I was a kid, like, why didn't she share her oil with the other wedding attendees? Because she wouldn't have had enough left over for herself if she had shared. And that was powerful to me because I always want to make sure that I have enough for myself and enough to share. And I think that's why I'm still like thinking about building more wealth. It's because I want to volunteer more. I want to donate more. I want to play more. I want to be that grandparent, like a parent figure in my grandchildren's lives. And I because of that wise woman, she could have been even wiser. She could have had enough to share. So that's what I think of.
I love that. I love that. Okay, and so the second question is, where do you like to roam? Now you've told me a bunch of places you've
Yes.
been, so where do you like to roam?
I like to slow travel. I like to live places. When I was in college, I lived in the Czech Republic for 4 months teaching English, you know, when I was 19. And my students were the same age as me. I taught at one of the local universities. And I just loved being able to just wander around the countryside like I lived there, right? So I do really enjoy living places. Like, so we did Florida. Like, do we want to stay here and get seasons passes to Universal and all of that? Like, let's go try it out for a few months and see how we like it. But I mean, I grew up in Seattle. I don't love the overcast and the rain and the trees and all that. We spent 20 years in Texas, which I loved. I love Texas. But Utah, I don't know. Like, when we showed up in Utah, we were a little scared, honestly, because there are a lot of stereotypes out there about Utah culture, but the weather and the mountains, I mean, it's just stunning here. And I have Mount Timpanogos like literally out my bedroom window. And a couple of months ago, we said, let's go climb that. So we set a day aside, a weekday, just went and climbed it. And I get so much awe and fulfillment from these mountains. I would hear
Yes.
people say that like people who lived in Utah but moved away, they're like, I just miss the mountains. I'm like, who cares? Like, why is it such a big deal? But you have this moment when you look at it, not all the time, it kind of fades into the background, but every once in a while you stop and you look at it and you're like, oh, and you're filled with this wonderment and this awe of the grandeur of nature. And I just want to go up in there because I love now looking out my window and seeing the top, tippy top of Timpanogos. And I'd be like, I know exactly what that looks like because I stood there.
So beautiful. So beautiful. Yeah, as I was mentioning to you before, Northern Utah is my favorite of all of the states we've visited so far. That's
It's
for sure.
impressive. And a lot of the people who
Yeah.
live here, like in my real estate investing community, did not grow up here, but they came here for skiing or something and couldn't leave. And
Yeah.
I get it now. I really do get it.
Okay, my final question, Miss Emma. What makes you restless?
I have asked myself this so many times. Like, there's an independent streak, a restless streak, the ADHD. I don't understand. I think being raised in a large family and being the youngest, and just there's not a lot. I mean, you see the baby of the family, there was no coddling going on. It was like, oh, we still have, you're still here. Like, I don't know. I have asked myself this so many times and gone through like seven levels of why. I don't know. It's got to be something from biology. I struggle with some autoimmune disorders that cause like fatigue and things like that I wonder, like, why, if I'm so fatigued all the time, like, why do I have this like restlessness and this need to get up and go do these things? I don't know what's going on. I cannot explain it. And
Well,
nobody else in my family is like this either.
to me, I think restlessness is a good thing. A lot of people think restlessness is a bad thing. I think it's a great thing because what it does is it keeps you curious and it keeps you seeking for more, the next thing. Not that you're not appreciating where you are now, but it to me, it keeps us alive. Our whole purpose in life is to live. And when you're not restless, when you're not looking, when you're not exploring and learning, you might as well be dead. So that's what restlessness means to me.
That's when I say early retirement and people don't click with it. Like, my marketing message is, we can help you retire early so you can go on more adventures. I mean, I have a podcast, Passive Income Adventures, where that's all we do is talk about how to pay for more adventures with both money and time and people's stories. And I say early retirement and people just shut down. They're like, I don't want to retire early. I don't want to lose my purpose. No, we're
Work
expanding
isn't your
your purpose.
purpose. Living is your
Yes, there's
purpose.
so, and you can continue to work. I run a business. We're gonna go
Yes.
drive a tour bus this summer. Like, we're continue. I teach piano lessons to some of the neighbor kids for a little, Christmas money. And it's so different than real estate that sometimes just sitting there with a little piano kid, and for that half hour, that hour, I am in a completely transported place of just
Yes.
music. And I mean, I don't want to full-time piano business, right? And it hardly makes any money at all, but it's a meditation and an escape, and I absolutely love doing it. So there's nothing bad about early retirement. It just means you're no longer working 40, 50 hours a week, and now you can pick and choose how many streams of income, where that's going to come from. It's freedom of
Amazing.
choice. Yeah.
Well, this has been tremendous. Thank you so much for being on the episode and the podcast. I really appreciate it. We have to stay in touch for sure.
Yes, you
Us
should come on my
nomads.
podcast. Tell your story of how you're financing all of these adventures.
Ooh,
I would love to hear that.
I would love
Yes.
to. We'll make that happen.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Emma, and you have a great day. How can people get a hold of you?
Best way, Passive Income Adventures podcast. You can listen to me drone in your ear with my guests. You're gonna learn a lot. They're long form, conversational, just hanging out with other people doing the thing. And then I make it easy. Investwithemma.com if you want to find out more about my fund itself, or on LinkedIn, Emma Powell 28. Send me a direct message over there. I post every day. That's basically my online hangout is LinkedIn.
Perfect. Well, we will do that. Thank you so much. And folks, take a look at the fund, take a look at the podcast, and link up with Emma. We'll talk to you soon.
Been a pleasure.